Support for the Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at groundbreakingresearch.org.
Live from the John L. Santico studio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. It was 2 years ago that the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that Roe is no more. But decades before the overturning of Roe v. Wade, pregnant people faced arrest and prosecution for supposed crimes against the fertilized eggs, embryos, and fetuses that they gestated. All of this centered on the idea that is now gaining traction in Republican circles and pro-life circles of fetal personhood. We're joined by Grace Howard, Assistant Associate Professor of Justice Studies at San Jose State University. Her new book is The Pregnancy Police: Conceiving Crime, Arresting Personhood. And Grace, welcome to The Source.
Thank you so much for having me, David.
So we're hearing a lot more about fetal personhood at the recent Texas Republican Party convention. There was a discussion, and they passed a party plank that said that they wanted abortion to be considered to be a capital crime. Because mm-hmm. they thought that a fetal personhood, that fetus, would be the same as killing a person. So mm-hmm. It seems like we've come a long way from where we were talking about abortion and to these extreme, almost absurd lengths of where this could go. What are you thinking?
I mean, when we talk about abortion and the way that attitudes have shifted in just the last few years, there is some really interesting stuff at play. We do have, I would say, anti-abortion Republicans being much more candid about what their beliefs actually are. The messaging, they've been able to shift it considerably. So they used to, you know, have to couch these arguments in some idea of protecting women from these scary doctors that are going to do bad things to them. Women don't know what they really need. They need the government to come in and protect them. And now we can just throw away all of that pretense. This was never about keeping women safe. This was never about protecting them. This was about controlling the people who can give birth to babies and about policing pregnancy, essentially.
I'm thinking about a law that was passed in Texas. It was SB 8 in 2017, mm-hmm. And it was the fetal burial law, or the fetal tissue burial law, where they were mm-hmm. going to require people who went through an abortion or had a miscarriage to pay for the burial of the fetal tissue. And mm-hmm. There you were saying this is not to, you know, penalize, or this is not to put more of a burden on it. This is just the respecting or recognizing the dignity of life. And of course, eventually, I mean, it was put into place, was immediately halted by a federal judge and never became actual authorized law. But to me, when you look back on these attempts of recognizing the fetal personhood, either overtly or through these other types of efforts, the game is exposed.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think now that Roe v. Wade is gone, we're really forced to see how that logic plays through, right? That you cannot recognize the full legal personhood of someone who's pregnant and the full legal personhood of a fertilized egg, embryo, or fetus at the same time. You just cannot do it. And what we've been seeing is that the anti-abortion folks tend to weigh on the side of that fetus almost every time. That's something that I find extremely alarming.
In Alabama, we had their state Supreme Court finding that the IVF frozen embryos were persons under the law, in the eyes of the law. These are now people. What complications did that create?
IVF case, I'm kind of obsessed with it. When that ruling came out, people all over the world were rightly outraged, I would suggest, right? That in the immediate, it had the effect of essentially shutting down IVF in the state. And now we have had at the state level and at the federal level some, you know, pretty weak attempts, I would say, to try to safeguard IVF. But something that really, you know, the bee in my bonnet about that Alabama case is As you said, I have a new book, The Pregnancy Police, Conceiving Crime, Arresting Personhood. And in that book, I explore how fertilized eggs, embryos, and fetuses were actually established to be legal persons in Alabama back in 2013. And people weren't talking about it back then.
Right, they had a, right? a voted-on constitutional amendment?
No. So this was a case involving pregnant people who get charged with crimes because they test positive for drugs during their pregnancies. Now, I'll say we have a lot of feelings about drug use in general, especially about pregnant folks who use drugs. I'm not saying pregnant folks should use drugs or that they should have special rights to use drugs. What I'm saying is that people who aren't pregnant can't get in trouble for simple use, and people who are pregnant are getting in trouble. So we, in this case that went to the Alabama Supreme Court, it was a woman who, you know, wanted to give birth to a baby. She wanted to have a healthy baby. She had a drug problem. She had a stillbirth. And they wanted to charge her with a felony for that. She eventually appealed, and it went to the state Supreme Court. And the state Supreme Court said, from the moment of conception, a fertilized egg, an embryo, or a fetus, these are all living persons in the criminal code. And so what that IVF case did, as outrageous as it is, it really just extended that logic, right? That logic that we had in the criminal code now exists in other places in the legal code. I've been calling it the fetal personhood creep, right? That you have fetal personhood established in one area or another. And it's typically described as a way to protect pregnant women from violence, a reality that is horrifying. But instead, what we see happening is those supposedly protective laws are then used to punish pregnant people, which is not good for pregnant folks or for their pregnancies, frankly.
Well, when I was referring to the 2018 when Alabama voters passed the ballot amendment 2, which acknowledges, declares, and affirms that it is the public policy of the state to ensure the protection and the rights of the unborn child in all manners and measures lawful and appropriate. So they voted on it as well. And they also, you know, they changed their state constitution for that.
Yes. Yes. And we've seen other states doing this as well. And 38 states have those sort of fetal protection laws that are written into the criminal code. But yes, since and actually before Roe v. Wade was overturned, we did see states trying to change their constitutions or states that had laws on the books from before Roe v. Wade. But they never bothered to strike down because we can just wait on those, right? If Roe is ever overturned, those laws could potentially go right back into effect. And so right now we're seeing these battles between old state law, new state law, state constitutions, federal constitutions. It's incredibly chaotic right now. It's difficult.
But it shows the impact
of
the loss of Roe. When Roe fell, suddenly there were no protections for the mother. All the rights went to the fetus, and these implications in the law and how far this will go is what's astonishing. So I want to talk more about that when we come back from the break. Our phone lines are open, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. We're discussing so-called fetal personhood, and the should the police be going after mothers for supposed crimes against fertilized eggs, embryos, and fetuses that they gestate? This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back.
Support for TPR comes from Jingu House in the Japanese Tea Garden, featuring Asian cuisine with a San Antonio twist. Open for lunch 7 days a week. View the menu at jinguhousesatx.com.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. With me on the line, Grace Howard, Associate Professor of Justice Studies at San Jose State University. Her new book is The Pregnancy Police, Conceiving Crime, Arresting Personhood. The Pregnancy Police investigates the legal arguments undergirding prosecutions of women who face arrest and prosecution for supposed crimes against fertilized eggs and embryos and fetuses that they gestate. And what happens to them? What is the legal argument for that? And what are their protections? You can call in with your questions and comments, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And let's go to caller Bonnie. And Bonnie, you're on the air. Bonnie, go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Our Texas law has an exception for the life of the mother and for abortions. And that's in Texas, given our maternal mortality and morbidity rate, it is safer to have an abortion than to give birth in Texas. And to me, that's the life of the mother needs to come in. I mean, that qualifies almost anybody. Thank you.
Well, thank you for the call, Bonnie. So Grace Howard, so what's your reaction to Bonnie's call?
I would love it if we interpreted the life of the mother that way, right? But unfortunately, we do not. There is a pretty alarming case at the Supreme Court. We are anticipating a decision in that case by the end of the month, where they are trying to dig into what an exception to save your life really means. States used to have broad health protections. So if you needed an abortion to protect your health, your mental health, your physical health, you could do that. But they've been carving away at that over the years. So they got rid of the mental health exceptions. Your mental health doesn't count anymore. And now this case that came out of Idaho, we are trying to determine where the line is between life-saving care and health-saving care. So for example, if you are miscarrying and you are becoming septic, you could lose your leg. Is that enough to kill you? Maybe not. And if that's the case, then you don't get to have your abortion. Doctors are being put in positions where they have to try to figure out how to translate this legal text into workable medical practice. And they're in some cases facing life in prison if they make the wrong decision, right? So let's say, oh, if you don't have this abortion, you will lose your uterus, right? You're going to lose your fertility. That does not put your life at risk. And so according to the law, that means you don't get to have an abortion, right? You have to lose your uterus. I'm nervous about what that case outcome
Well, in Texas, the law is bodily function, preserve life, the life of the mother and bodily function. So
major bodily function.
Major bodily function, yeah.
So maybe a kidney, we have to save that, but a leg,
we can get another kidney. You can buy one online, I hear. So
yeah,
the dark web.
Yeah, you got to. Yeah, right. I mean, it's so precarious. Like bodies are complicated, and the line between your life being at risk and your health being at risk is not some clear line. Especially when a lot of these you know health problems can proceed into life-threatening medical risk. It's not a good place to be, right? We have people who would never choose to have an abortion, people who are trying to make their families, who have to consider, you know, if I get pregnant again, I might lose my legs. Will that work for me? You know, I mean, people shouldn't have to think about that kind of stuff when they're thinking of making families.
Well, one of the interesting arguments that you bring up, if there is the creation, there is no such thing as a pregnancy police force yet. But in a sense, we are seeing a expansion of the power of the state in order to protect the fetal in lives or, you know, mm-hmm. fetal personhood. So, I mean, it just seems like that is not a conservative thought that you would have the expansion of the power of the government in order to do this. How much power growth could there be for the state in order to enforce fetal personhood?
I'm really worried about this. I mean, in the book, I argue that the way that our laws have functioned, we already have essentially defined pregnant people as a lesser class of citizen, as a lesser class of person. When you become pregnant, you lose a bunch of your rights. And that just shouldn't be. We're also seeing right now a pretty troubling, say, weakening of a lot of our legal norms and institutions. So laws and courts that are supposed to work in very specific ways, they're not quite working in those ways anymore. You know, some people are talking about this as a direct threat to democracy. And I look at it that way, too, as a political science PhD. I'm deeply concerned about what it would look like to have this kind of criminalization stuff enshrined at the national level, which is all very possible given where our politics are right now.
So what rights do the supporters of fetal personhood want to, provide to an unborn person?
This is where it stands currently. They count legally as crime victims. They can count legally as medical patients. We consider fetuses in civil law. So if a pregnancy is damaged, let's say, by, some kind of environmental contaminant, can we find the polluter, civilly responsible, right? They'd have to pay for that. We've done that in a few cases. We have some strange cases about wrongful birth and wrongful death, cases where, this is a case out of Texas recently, actually, someone was supposed to have had their tubes tied. The doctor didn't do it and didn't inform them. That person became pregnant and they didn't want to be, gave birth to a child, and they were seeking civil damages for that surgery that was never done and that they were not informed about. And the court said, you had a healthy baby born. We can't count that as a penalty. Right? You're being forced essentially to carry pregnancies to term, even if you're supposed to not be pregnant or fertile any longer, right? So I think we're seeing the inversion of so many of our laws and norms right now for people who can get pregnant, mostly who are women.
We know that consumption of alcohol, if you are pregnant, is bad for, fetal alcohol syndrome is a thing. Smoking, not good if you're pregnant. Can the state prevent people who are pregnant from consuming alcohol and smoking cigarettes?
They can certainly try. We have seen states, Alabama being one of them, South Carolina, Tennessee did this for 2 years only, defining certain substances specific to pregnancy as problematic. So you might remember the panic over crack babies that happened in the late 80s and early 90s. There were many people arrested because of that panic. And then we later learned that most of those so-called medical problems that were supposed to be caused by crack actually weren't, that we were wrong. A lot of that medical evidence was very preliminary. And what we were seeing wasn't the impact of crack cocaine on a pregnancy. We were seeing the impact of poverty on a pregnancy. So we have seen, the biggest focus has been on illegal drugs. But there are cases in my data set where people were flagged for drinking alcohol and for smoking cigarettes during a pregnancy as well. When I think about the things you're not supposed to do when you're pregnant, it's a seemingly infinite list. And so another question I have is, where do we draw the line, right? Caffeine is supposed to be bad for pregnancy. Are we going to lock you up for drinking a cup of coffee? Is a glass of wine okay, but two glasses not okay? We also know that your access to good prenatal care has a profound impact on the health of your baby. So even if you were drinking heavily during their pregnancy, there are some studies showing as long as you have good nutrition, good prenatal care, you might not have a baby with fetal alcohol syndrome. There are so many variables at play that really get obscured when we talk about criminalizing it.
So you can talk about those things in a very practical, nutritional manner through those eyes, but the eyes of the law, that's something else entirely. I'm going to go to this caller. We have Jennifer. And Jennifer, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. As a young person, I was against abortion. And as time went on, I got married. And after 5 years, we decided to have children. And my very first attempt, I had an ectopic pregnancy, and it ruptured. And we really were unschooled, and so we waited a weekend, and I nearly lost my life bleeding out. And my view on abortion then changed drastically because an abortion changed my life. And subsequently, I had two other children, like us, Baptist. So the thing is, you know, there would be three fewer Baptists in the world if this hadn't happened to me. So sometimes it's all a matter of perspective.
Jennifer, thank you so much for the call. I sure do appreciate you sharing that story with us. Thank you. Grace Howard, your reaction.
Jennifer, thank you so much for sharing that with us. That must have been just so terrifying. Ectopic pregnancy is pretty rare, but it is something that happens. When I worked in an abortion clinic, actually the first case I was working on, the person had an ectopic pregnancy, and we needed to get them to the emergency room. I think that what you went through is not uncommon. We all have, you know, ideas about what we would or wouldn't do in our kind of moral code. And then sometimes we are confronted with realities that we did not expect. And so our view shifts. I think that that's, you know, fully normal. And I think a lot of people are seeing that right now. The polls have been more in favor of abortion now than they ever have been. And I think it's because people who maybe would have once called themselves anti-abortion are seeing what that practically, materially means. It means that mothers are literally having to take food out of their children's mouths because they are being forced to give birth to another child they cannot take care of. Families are being plunged into poverty. People's health and lives are being put at risk. We know that this makes domestic violence so much worse. Pregnancy is a red flag for homicide, actually. So there are just so many ways that these laws impact our lives. Thank you for sharing that with us.
Texas, has a pretty tough ban on abortion. And so we are seeing a high number of people going to New Mexico and other states where there's abortion freedom. And so we're seeing a movement of these local municipalities and counties trying to pass these anti-abortion travel bans, saying you can't use our roads to get to New Mexico for an abortion. And you will be using local law enforcement, I imagine, to try to enforce these things. Mm-hmm. So would that be the abortion police?
Those could be. In my data set, I did have a few cases where people were discovered in the car. Typically, it would be, you know, you go to give birth, your healthcare provider reports you to the cops. So usually your doctors and nurses are the pregnancy police. But in a few cases, you know, maybe you get pulled over for speeding, and then the police officer notices you have a visibly pregnant belly. So maybe they decide we're going to give you a speeding ticket, but also you have recklessly endangered your pregnancy. That's the way that we're seeing this sort of car enforcement go. I think it's really disturbing that we're seeing these travel bans put into place. You know, in Texas, many of the municipalities putting these bans on the books are along the highway to New Mexico. So it's very strategic what they're trying to do here. It's really troubling. It's sort of undermines the entire federalist system of law. The idea that we have a federal government and then we have states. States can have their own laws. You're supposed to be able to travel around. They're trying to make it so you can't travel around, can't cross state lines. It's very worrisome.
We're going to continue talking about the pregnancy police. What does this mean for the rights of women who are pregnant moving forward? And what does that do for healthcare overall? The number to call in is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. The source continues right after this. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. The book the Pregnancy Police, Conceiving Crime, Arresting Personhood. We're joined by the author, Grace Howard, Associate Professor of Justice Studies at San Jose State University. The implications of fetal personhood extend beyond the individual rights to broader societal and ethical considerations. It brings into question the balance between protecting life and preserving the rights of the women. The legal recognition could also disproportionately affect marginalized women who already face significant barriers to health care and social support. If you've got a question, give us a call, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. So Grace, does fetal personhood impact certain populations more than others?
Absolutely. And it's just as you said, if you are already marginalized in some way, these sorts of punitive laws, all of these restrictions will have a greater impact on you. One of the callers mentioned the maternal mortality rate and the infant mortality rate. The United States is sort of off the charts among developed democracies in terms of our rates. They're both really high for a rich country. But of course, that is worse for Black women and Indigenous women in particular in the U.S. The rates are far higher. People who are poor are also really heavily disadvantaged here. Think if you do need to travel across the country to have an abortion, can you take time off of work? Can you find someone to watch your kids? Can you afford a hotel room? Right? I mean, there are so many things that go into consideration here. People who are incarcerated have virtually no access to abortion now when they used to, because they're not allowed to travel, right? If you're on probation, you're not allowed to travel out of state, period. Really any way you can slice it, if you are already marginalized or oppressed in some way, these sorts of bans make everything worse.
Did you ever watch that series, Handmaid's Tale, Margaret Atwood, based on Margaret Atwood's novel?
Oh, yes, yes. The first few seasons and read the book, too.
Yeah. Do you see how fetal personhood can lead down the road to something where there's just this absolute authoritarian state where it is the protecting the life of an unborn child is the most, the highest thing that they value?
Yes. And to such an extent that they actually undermine their own stated goals sometimes. I'm remembering an episode, and this goes beyond what they ever wrote about in the book, where someone is having trouble in labor, and the best doctor who could care for that person is a woman, and she's not allowed to be a doctor anymore. I think, pretty telling. Margaret Atwood was really clear with The Handmaid's Tale that everything she wrote about happening in that book had already happened in the real world historically at one point or another. And that is just so true. I think about another scene in particular, a woman attempted to kill herself, one of the handmaids. She was pregnant, and I think they said she drank Drano. And so when we meet her, she is cuffed in a basement with nothing but a bed. And she's being held there until she gives birth. And then I imagine she's being, executed or sent to the colonies. That is the reality, right? That is the reality of fetal personhood. People who are pregnant or who can get pregnant cannot maintain their legal status if we give those rights to fetuses.
Let's go to a caller. Our number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Let's go to George. And George, hi, you're on the air.
Hello, we're talking about societal considerations. I think we're going to commit suicide if we don't start having more babies. But what rights do fathers have? Fathers have to pay for all the sins of these baby mamas. Don't we need some laws where fathers can kind of help them somehow protect their babies?
All right, George, thank you for the call. Appreciate it. George, Grace Howard.
a really aptly timed comment, because in The Handmaid's Tale, the thing that happened, I think they don't get into it quite as much in the TV series, but they are seeing a problem with babies. People are not able to have babies anymore. Population decline. And this is based on a real life theory. It's called the Great Replacement Theory. There's an idea that the right people aren't having enough babies anymore. And so we need to ban abortion to force them to. This is actually what banned abortion the first time in the United States back in the 1800s. We were worried that we were being outbred by immigrants, essentially. And so we banned abortion. What rights do fathers have? So fathers don't get to decide if someone has an abortion or not currently, though some states are trying to pass laws that require you to get permission from a spouse or potentially from the quote-unquote father. I thought the idea of these being the sins of the baby mama was pretty interesting because, of course, immaculate conception is not something that really happens. Typically, two people have to have sex for somebody to become pregnant. We have also been seeing, though, we know men are required to pay child support for the children that they father. Some men believe that means they should have a right to say if a child gets born or not. You know, this is something that's currently being debated. I might suggest that maybe the government can support children, and then men won't have to worry about that so much. I think it needs to be stated, though, the being required to pay for something, I would say, is not the same as being required to be pregnant and give birth to a human being.
Texas is one of three states where the law is if the woman is pregnant, that she cannot be granted a divorce.
Yes.
So can you talk about that?
Yes, I know some people are trying to repeal these laws. They were so shocked that they existed because they were nullified under Roe. And now, you know, they're here. Not being able to have a divorce when you are pregnant is so worrisome. Like I said earlier, we know that the time in a woman's life when she is most likely to be murdered is when she is pregnant. And the person who typically does the murdering is her intimate partner. And so being pregnant and in a bad relationship is a real problem and a significant threat to a person's life and safety. Being forced to stay legally tied to a person in those circumstances, I think, must be absolutely terrifying for the people involved.
So, I mean, is this just one of these laws in the books that people don't know and doesn't really go into effect? Or is this really being enforced that you cannot be, you can file for divorce when you're pregnant, but they can't grant it to you until after the pregnancy has run its course?
Yeah, so I haven't seen much in terms of enforcement, but I imagine that's how they would have to leave it. You would have to wait until birth in order to you know, do anything about that. Something that's interesting there, and this is in the way that we sort of legally define families, if two people are married, then any children that the woman gives birth to are automatically, we assume, to be the children of the husband. And so, you know, his legal, he becomes the legal guardian of those children. If you're not married, that's not necessarily the case. And so by preventing divorce before birth, you are essentially requiring that that legal tie be established.
Let's go to a caller, Cynthia. Cynthia, you're on the air.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Okay. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Well, I was telling your lady friend that put me on hold that I hear so much about women's rights taken away, but I don't see anything about men paying. They're not paying their child support. They're not being responsible for their kids. I mean, these women are on welfare because of these guys reproducing with them. And I had my best friend, her husband was with those moving companies, and they paid him cash so he wouldn't have to get his money out of paying child support. You don't hear any of that on the news, on any program, and they don't talk about taking away Viagra and all these things that these men are being able to have. But all you hear is about women's rights taken away. And there's a lot of men, sir, that say they can't have kids, and they tell these women they can't have kids, and they can't, and they just lie to these women. I know several women that have been lied to.
Well, Cynthia, you bring up a lot of different things, and I appreciate that. Thank you for calling in so much. I like your perspective. So, Grace Howard, can we talk more about like what so men and what's their role in all this?
Mm-hmm. Well, we know that in order for someone to become pregnant, sperm needs to be around, right? And we can do this in labs, right? And in, you know, test tubes, for example. But typically, if someone becomes pregnant, it's because at least two people had sex together, okay? But yes, I think these kind of punitive laws, these abortion bans, it really lays bare just what a sexist society that we are living in today, unfortunately. Men who have sex are just guys doing their thing, and women who have sex are sinners, right? Who have done something bad and deserve to be punished. I think we often position the pregnant woman as someone bad and the fetus as something innocent too, right? And I just think it needs to be stated that there's nothing wrong with consenting adults having sex, that even if you have the best contraception, pregnancy can always occur. And that, yes, males play a part there. And they are not expected to pay the price in the same way that women are. In my book, for example, right, I talk about women who get charged with crimes against their fetus because they test positive for drugs. Now, we know that environment can play a part in the quality of sperm. So, for example, if a male drinks alcohol during the 72 days in which a single sperm cell is developing in his body, and then that sperm cell impregnates an egg, that can have an impact on that fetus's health. But I have never seen a man get arrested for that. I've seen many women get arrested for that, but never a man. And I'm not saying that men should be getting arrested. I would say nobody should be getting arrested for that kind of thing.
But it certainly draws up the inequality that is present.
Absolutely.
All right, and the conversation and the ideas that we're talking about, we're going to continue the conversation right after this break. The number is 833-877-8255, and the book is The Pregnancy Police. We'll be right back. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Let's get back to Grace Howard discussing her book, The Pregnancy Police, Conceiving Crime, Arresting Personhood. Let's go to Michael, and then after Michael, I'm going to talk to Edward. So, Edward, hang on. Michael, you're on the air.
Oh, it's good to talk. I'm troubled more often than anything about the idea that somehow or another a woman's right and say so about her body somehow or another is determined with law. I mean, I'm struggling for words to say if anyone wants to do anything to my body, if anyone wants anything taken off my body, basically they have to have my consent. But we seem to be in a world where we've forgotten that we're supposed to be equal, that a woman is expected to basically give up her autonomy of sorts. Do you understand what I'm saying? I mean, it's just the idea that beyond the medicine, beyond the science, all of these things are compelling, but the basic idea of someone's right to decide what they're going to do with their body being taken away creates a second class citizen, so to speak. I mean, you've just basically taken a group of people their right over their own bodies.
Right. Michael, thank you for that. And you're basically quoting Ruth Bader Ginsburg. That's what her argument was. Grace Howard?
Yes, I appreciate that comment very much. I like to make this comparison. Let's say there is, you know, the best person who ever lived. They're a great musician. They're going to solve all of the illnesses and cure poverty and everything else. And let's say they need a kidney or they will die. And now let's say we've got the worst person in the world. They're like murderers and have bad taste and nobody likes them and they smell bad. And they have the matching kidney that we need. Are we allowed to take that person's kidney? Absolutely not. That would be such an intimate invasion. Our government has said soundly, you're not allowed to do that. But for some reason, if we're saying you have to force, we're going to force you to use your body to sustain the life of another, a fetus, that's okay. It is truly separate standards.
Let's go to Edward on the phone. Thanks for hanging on, Edward. You're on the air.
No worries. Thank you for the show. So just as a preface, I'm generally sympathetic to the pro-choice movement or stance and argument, but maybe I missed it, but I think something that's always missing, at least in my exposure in the pro-choice discourse and philosophy, is when does the right to life begin? I can infer that the guest and many others would say it's not at conception. Is it at viability? Is it at the day of birth? Is it at 5 years old? Is it at 18 when we can vote and participate in our democracy? I think unless the pro-choice movement starts to take a stand and a stance on that question, their argument will always, forever be incomplete.
All right. Thank you for that call, Edward. And so, Grace Howard.
Great comment. I think this is ultimately a philosophical and moral debate, when life begins or when life becomes meaningful enough to count. This is something that varies by society, by decade. In some places, you're not a person until you turn a year old because, you know, so many babies die so young. And under Roe v. Wade, viability was the point of time in which a fetus's rights could become more important than the pregnant person's. I feel, frankly, pretty uncomfortable with that being legislated because it is such a philosophical, moral idea. It's often religious, but not always. I think most pro-life or pro-choice people, rather, would say that it begins at birth. Right. As soon as a baby is born, then it is literally separate now. But I know that not everybody finds that argument compelling either. These kinds of things are not things that should be legislated. They're not things that our government should be ruling on because they are essentially moral or religious. I could say life begins before conception. Right. Because the egg was alive. The sperm was alive. And the people who donated those gametes were also alive at one point, probably still are, right? So could we base our legislation on that idea, right? It's so amorphous. It's not
right, but you know, I do want to take a very practical point of view on this. Clearly, if someone is very pregnant, they're in their last trimester, you know, approaching their birth date. You know, if something happens to that mom, if they're attacked violently, that causes mm-hmm. some severe damage to the child that is yet to be born. I mean, shouldn't that be a crime?
It is.
Yeah, but shouldn't
anyone
it be
is a crime? I would say it should be, but I want to do it in a very specific way. So most states have decided if you're super pregnant and someone attacks you, that we're going to count this as two crimes, right? A crime against a regular person and a crime against a fetus. And we've seen those laws and rulings then used against pregnant people. So I'm not into that. What if instead we defined pregnant people as specific and special types of crime victims? We do this with police officers. We do this in some states with sports referees, actually, because we recognized how vulnerable they are to harm. So in this way, you don't end up accidentally writing fetal personhood into the criminal code, but you can still recognize the special harm that happens when a pregnant person is violated like that.
So the idea of fetal personhood, let's get back to the original idea. We're talking about that's just what many people who have a lot of influence on what happens in the state of Texas, this is what they're striving for. If they're able to establish that fetal personhood is a thing and that it needs to have the protection of law, and then I just can't get over the fact that when you take it to its logical conclusion, what that means for the rights of women and how we're going to run our society, it seems to upend. Are they actually aware of the extreme parts of this argument? Do they want this, that you would imprison anyone who seems to be not gestating their child responsibly? Is that what they want?
I think that the people who are making these laws, who are writing these laws, and who are making these judgments are fully aware that this is what will happen, that this is the logical outcome.
I think some people, though, maybe people who are voting one way or another, you know, kind of general public, now they're seeing this and they're going like, wait a minute, that's what fetal personhood means? Like, fetal personhood means that, like, we're going to force this pregnant lady over here to go septic for a few hours. Fetal personhood means we're going to cut women open against their will for, you know, forced cesareans they don't need.
Or we're going to force people to take a pregnancy test before they're allowed into the bar.
Yeah. I mean, as an example, or before they're allowed on an airplane, right? We don't want you traveling across the country to exercise your rights in California, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, are we just letting our imaginations run away with us when we talk about scenarios like that?
I know they sound so absurd and impossible, but that's what people said about Roe being overturned, right? People said that would never happen either. And I'm not talking hypotheticals, right? In my book, I do an analysis of 1,116 cases where pregnant people were arrested and charged with crimes against their own pregnancies. And those sorts of outrageous things, they are happening in real life, and they have been happening for decades. There was a case a few decades ago. A woman was pregnant with a wanted pregnancy when her cancer came back very aggressively, and she wanted to have an abortion so that she could pursue cancer treatment and try to save her life. Someone who wasn't even related to her care, like a lawyer in the hallway, overheard this, and they essentially got a judge to issue a warrant to cut this woman open against her will. They did an early cesarean before they would start her cancer treatment. The cesarean killed her, and it killed the baby, right? So they do these things on the basis of protecting fetuses, of protecting babies, but ultimately it's not doing that either.
So I'll ask you something else really quickly because we're running close on time. So contraception, of birth control, mm-hmm. of trying to prevent being pregnant now, there are people who are using the fetal personhood argument in order to try to outlaw contraception. How does that work? What's the logic?
Yes. So the logic, they would debate what counts as birth control or as contraceptive. So most contraception works by stopping ovulation from happening. And so then there's no egg to get pregnant with at all, right? Nothing that can't happen. But some kinds of contraception work by preventing the implantation of a fertilized egg. Pregnancy doesn't start until that fertilized egg implants. But if you see a fertilized egg as a legal person, you might have some problems with those kinds of contraception. So that would be they're trying to ban the various kinds of IUDs. They're trying to ban emergency contraception, right? The morning after pill on that basis. And they're thinking of using a law from the 1800s to try to accomplish that.
And even including all, but what about like, you know, rubbers and everything else? They still want
to... Oh, yeah. I mean, you could. We've had legislators talking about how they want to outrule casual sex, right? Non-procreative sex. And if you look at that law I mentioned, it's called the Comstock Act. It was an anti-vice law. And it basically made it a crime to ship any quote-unquote obscene material through the mail. But who gets to decide what counts as obscene, right? And so at that time, it included, yes, we had condoms back then. It included condoms and other sort of rudimentary
and even information. Information.
Yes,
about
pamphlets on the rhythm method, right? It also included things like erotica. We haven't seen much talk about this, but I'm also very concerned that the Comstock Act is going to be used to impact trans people and gay people. We could totally use that to ban materials, medications.
Right. They want to make the Comstock Act great again. Grace Howard, thank you so much. The book is The Pregnancy Police, Conceiving Crime, Arresting Personhood. It was great talking to you today.
Thank you so much. My pleasure.
And that's The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted and produced by David Martin Davies. Kayla Padilla is our booking and engagement producer. Engineering support from Ruben Garcia, Jesse Reeves, and Steve Short. Dan Katz is TPR's Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.